It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along. Captain Mike.
Captain John, how you doing today?
Doing good. Got to get some questions answered since last week's show. People have come to me and want to know, are you getting any more luck with boat engines?
With boat engines? No.
Okay, because they said, I didn't realize that was a big a deal. I got to get on a list because I heard you and Mike talking about the scarcity of boat engines.
Yeah. Now, I just got off the phone a while ago before I came in here talking to a friend of mine that he ordered some 400 Mercuries, I think about a month ago. Anyway, he is supposed to be in about 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay.
You know, so I guess I'm trying to get Yamahas.
Okay.
So that's a little bit different story.
Is it all, and we're going to get in the hunting talk here in a second, but is it just 300s? Is it 150s? Is it 25 horsepower? I mean, is it all of them?
I think they're all pretty much are, especially the bigger engines.
Okay, so you bigger know, engines
the 250, 300, 354, 25s. I think those are the harder engines to get going on the bigger boats.
Okay.
You know, so I think the smaller ones may be easier, but I'm not real sure about those. But I know the 300s and the 425s are hard to get in the Yamahas.
So the pro tip here is if y'all are thinking about repowering this year,
yeah,
you better be on it.
It's kind of like if you're planning on hunting next year, go to your local McCoy Outdoors and order what you want. So when they do get a box in, you'll get one. Don't think about trying to get a box of ammunition next November 20th when deer season opens up because you won't get them.
And, you know, this reaction, you and I talked about last time. When we go through this, it's happened many times. But when there's not ammo, then when there finally is ammo, people buy way more than normal.
Yes, they do.
So if they're not limited by the store, they're going to say 140 grain, 7mm odd 8, Remington core lock. How many you got? I'll take them all.
That's right. Whether it's 3 boxes, 12 boxes.
I'll take them all.
That's right.
That's all it takes is not being able to get them. And this has happened before.
That's right.
And I did this in the past. And I think I'm still working off the ammo that I had then. But I had to have – my brother-in-law was going up to my in-law's place – and I knew there was a box. I can't find – my daughter's shooting a 243. And we shot up through some rounds, getting her used to the rifle and shooting it. And I told her, stop, stop. She said, what, Dad, stop. So we have 3 rounds left to our name. But I remembered up at my in-laws, I had stashed a box up there.
So
it was that desperate. I had somebody west of Chatham bringing me a box of 243 to get
us. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's no different even in the safes. You know, of course, it's guns, ammunition, and safes.
Right.
That's the 3 things that kind of all go together.
Sure they do.
And right now at you know, Wards Liberty Safes, we have about 20 safes that we can sell. We probably have 40 or 50 in there. The rest of them are sold. But we have 20 or so that we can – that's still available. And got a big truckload coming from Liberty.
You do?
Do have.
Okay.
But about 3/4 of those are pre-sold. Now, we got Browning safes coming.
Right.
We got some AMSACs, American Security safes coming, and some other brands coming, too.
Right.
You know, but we're trying to stick with American-made safes. We really don't like selling China safes.
Right.
We really don't. We want to do
American safes. It's a great thing
safes
with the company. Yeah.
But it may get to the point that if you want a safe, you might have to get a China safe. And I hate to sell China safes.
Well, but if somebody has decided they do want to get – you know, certain Liberty safe or something like that, come on in.
It's
get
just,
on the,
just like I'm telling you about the ammunition. Don't
right.
wait till next year to go try to get some right for hunting season. If you want a safe right now, you need to go see Sarah or Philip at the store.
And they can show you, I'm sure, with stuff,
stuff
that's sold, you can
what you're going to get or similar to what you're going to get. That's what I would do right now. Because right now, if you are a safe today, you're probably looking at – at least 6-8 weeks, maybe 10 weeks, getting it.
Okay. So go do it today.
And it's probably going to get worse, Sean.
Yeah, so act now
and
get that done. And it's something that I, as a person that has a Liberty safe, I say this, so I'm not even in the store, right? I'm a consumer. Let me tell you this. All right. Number one, when they tell you buy more safe than you think you need, there, it's not a sales pitch.
Buy a bigger safe than you think you need. Yes, that's the number. I tell everybody that.
And so I did, but I didn't. So I did this thing. I got the medium drink, basically, because I think it was Miss Sarah Phillip told me, get twice the safe you think you need.
That's right.
And I'm like, get a little bit bigger than the one I think. I'm going to take y'all's advice halfway.
Yeah.
it's like if I go, I had to get one of the kids' social security cards out the other night for something for they had for school. It was like unloading like a back of a truck or something. I had half my office full of
like
stuff
trying
to get
into the bottom of your toolbox.
Exactly.
Yes.
So do what they say. Get twice the safe. And I can tell you, I've not ever owned another kind, but the Liberty safe, I love.
Yeah.
I love that safe.
Well, Liberty's real good. Browning's real good. AmSAC's real good. And we got one other brand. I forget the name of it. But all these American-made safes, they're all really good quality safes. So any of those are good. Liberty's our number one selling safes by far. I mean, we're I believe, like number three or number four independent retail seller for Liberty in the country.
Holy cow.
Yes. I mean, so we sell a lot of Liberty safes. I mean, they are our number one safe by far. You know, we sell quite a few Brownings, and they're a great safe too.
I just don't have experience. The one that I touch on a five time a week basis is Liberty, and I love
but
that one.
What I tell everybody when they come and buy a safe is, like you're talking about, if you're looking at that one, try to get at least one size bigger. You're only talking about in that same model, maybe a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah, do what they say, because don't do what I do and go say, I'm going to do halfway what they tell me.
Buy the biggest one you can put wherever you're going to put it.
Yep.
That's what I would do, and maybe come down in the quality
to get a bigger one.
Yep. Yes, that's what I'd
recommend. The nice thing is too, and this is a side note, and then I want to talk some hunting and fishing.
Yeah,
but I learned this too, that getting the right kind of safe and the right finish is important, because if you want to have it not in a closet or not in a like garage or something like that, and your spouse may have something to say about that.
Yeah.
Getting these Liberty, ours is that gray textured finish and stuff. It looks good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying that. Just trying to keep some peace in homes.
Yeah. Well, they all look good, but then you do have some that are really polished out, really beautiful.
Right. That's what I'm saying. And that might help you have a better placement for that safe in your home, gentlemen.
Yes.
Okay, and ladies, if you're listening, you might nod along with me. All right. A couple things here on that, because we're going to talk some hunting today. Lake Pickle from Primos is going to join us in a little bit. A lot to talk about with him. Fishing-wise, quickly talking to Captain Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
Knock on wood, even this little bit of rain here, we have not had the big rains. That's going to be part of our conversation later with Lake, but not had the big winter rains we've had in the past. That means saltwater has stayed in the Dog River, Fowl River, Fish River, those kind of the bayou, and the fishing stay good.
And Mobile River.
Yeah.
They've been really knocking them out in Mobile River.
So,
been doing good because the water's real clear. I mean, way clearer than normal.
The last couple of years, remember at this point, Barry would have been at 10 or 11 feet.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're in a real good situation. And same thing for, and Mobile River's even more at risk, obviously, for upstate rain. But when you look at Dog River and Fowl River for local, just hadn't had the local rain.
That's right.
And so it's clear. Bobby says that clear water's on into the back of Dog and Fowl. And slick lures, fishing slick lures, which you and I got to talk about. We're going to go fishing with Bobby, slick lure fishing soon. He's catching some really nice fish. So
awesome.
Anywhere from, he said, in the normal pockets where you think they are on the bends, the deep part, he said, we have these warm trends like this. They're moving up on the ledge right next to it, and the fishing's been very, very good. So inshore fishing strong on the speckled trout front. The redfish, they don't care if it's cold or hot. Redfish are biting
because that's what they do. With things warming up right now, too, the bass fishing's got to be off the chart good right now.
Yeah, and it might be, you get that warming trend, it might be time to start checking some, probably wait till after the end of the month, but check the duck blinds. They get a little bit mad when you're, if you're in there hunting and you're pitching jigs into duck blinds. But we'll talk about that kind of fishing with Wayne Miller coming up in a future show. All right. A couple things here on the rut front. Told you I had a great hunt last weekend. Had them going berserker.
Right.
And a lot of straight-up chasing. I'm seeing all the things. I'm seeing cruising bucks with no does. Just cruising, checking.
Me too.
Pre-run. I'm watching some bucks just pushing does, not chasing, but pushing, and I'm seeing chasing.
Yeah.
I'm seeing all three.
For me up there, it's like something happened this past weekend for us up there.
It wasn't good. You said it was
not good. It wasn't good for us. And we saw less deer than we way less deer than we normally do.
I wonder if the does are in high. I didn't see a ton of – well, that one hunt that I did see like seven does in the yearlings, but not seeing as many does, but I'm definitely seeing bucks. Where I see a doe, I'm seeing bucks.
Yeah.
If I see a doe, I think this last week, I didn't see a doe without a buck.
Well, I did. I saw quite a few does without bucks.
What's going on, man?
I don't know. And I saw some. I was hunting on the road, like we talk about. It's always good.
Yeah.
And I saw does by themselves coming across the road, and I saw bucks coming across the road by themselves. You know, the does come across, and as soon as they come across, man, I'm got my gun mm-hmm. and I'm ready. You know. No, but I did see. I mean, one doe came through the feeder. And mm-hmm. she had her tail up, and I told Dylan, I was hunting with Dylan, I said, Dylan, there's a buck with that doe.
Mm-hmm.
Her tail's up, and she's wiggling it. I said, you watch and see. Just hang tight. Get your gun ready. I said, because you don't ever know.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just a minute later. Here he comes. Yeah. You know, it was a nice little 7-point, but it wasn't something we wanted to shoot.
Well, so we're seeing a kind of a mixing. But I mean, over this last weekend, I did see all three. I saw bucks just cruising looking. You know, looking.
Yeah.
The lookers that are always walking and looking and walking and looking. I saw them come in and push does around, and the does leave them, and I saw straight up chasing them. So.
The rut's on because Facebook shows it.
That's right.
They're putting them on the ground.
That is for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, coming up, Lake Pickle from Primos. You might know him from the Speak the Language podcast or the Primos videos, TV show. He's a heck of a guy, and he's been on with us once in the past. He joins us again next, right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. And a couple things here. About our next guest here. He's been on the show with us once in the past, and I got to tell you, it's a generational thing here. Mike and I talking before we got the phone call put out to Lake Pickle with Primos, that generationally, now Mike is, we act about the same, but you're 20 years my senior, right?
Yeah, I am.
So you and I are about 20 years apart.
Yeah.
And Lake's about 20 years younger than me. But we're talking about the generations of folks with Primos, and I think it's a really good story.
I know all the old folks at Primos. I don't know any of the young folks.
Well, we're making introductions to the young folks and the new ones on the block, although he's been here a while. Lake Pickle with Primos joining us now. Lake, thanks for your time.
On here again, and man, honestly, I'm always excited when I get an invite back because I'm like, that's good. It means I didn't, you know, scare anyone off.
That's right. There's a lot to talk about with you, and you didn't scare it. People enjoyed having you on the show, and it also gives me a time to pick on you because I want to thank you. I want to thank you and the Primos crew for all folks that hunt the river swamp, and I don't hunt the river swamp as much as I used to, but for all the river swamp hunters out there, we're going to give you, Mike, we got to go get a trophy. You can get a trophy for Primos that when they gave up the lease to the finest piece of Mississippi bottom land that exists and moved up to the hills was the first year we've had a dry year along the rivers since I can't remember when. So, Lake, thank you to you and everybody else at Primos.
Hey, I will gladly accept that trophy. If that means that the river wanted to act good, if it took us going away to do it, then so be it, you know.
I feel a kinship because that'd be something I would do. I'd finally say, the heck with it, I'm not going to hunt down this swamp. And then, it'd be 10 years of dry years. I mean, it was – and we're talking about Cottonmouth. And if y'all have watched, of course, Primo's show, y'all been – how long has the show been based out of Cottonmouth?
Six seasons, I think.
So, a while.
Six. Yeah. But you had another place that was in the river, too, before that, didn't you? Wasn't there – around the river?
We had Wilbur's place, Rivers Run, but it was not on the river. It was in the Mississippi Delta.
He was levee protected over there.
Yeah.
That hadn't mattered.
The first place that we did inside the levee.
Although that hadn't mattered much, as much flooding. You know, just a little side note here. I know this is a South Alabama show, and we're not, you know, but there's enough people from here that hunt up in that neck of the woods that, you know, when they shut the gates, it doesn't matter. When they shut those gates, all that water backs up. Even if you're on the good side of the levee, you still can get flooded.
people down there in the South Downs have just had a heck of a time dealing with that.
Well, there were several clubs around, well, quite a few clubs around here that's on the river system here that in the last several years, they really haven't got to hunt at all.
Tom Bigby stayed out since before season till the after, I mean, till May.
Yeah, turkey season, no deer, no turkeys, no nothing. So we feel your pain.
It was that river like that, because I personally had never deer hunted on the river, especially inside the levee, until I started working for Primos. And so when I started there, it was like just this unworldly experience for me. I was like, man, this is crazy. And then I remember the first time I saw the river come up. I remember seeing it, how it affected the deer, seeing them get pushed out on the levees. But just to think about how bad the river's been the past few years, and then to watch how it's been, watch what it did this year. It's something that I learned is I was like, I told, like, no matter what you do, that river is going to do what it wants to do. And sometimes it can be really mean, and sometimes it can be really nice, but you just, you're at the mercy of it. If you're on that river, you're at the mercy of it.
Yeah, you got to have, if you're going to stay consistent in hunting, you've got to have, if you have a place in the river, you got to have a place, got to have a friend with some high ground that you trade out with when the river's down, let them come hunt with you, and then, go to their place when the river's up. And I want to talk about that for a second, too. I think you and I talked about some last time that focusing on one property, I thought it was so interesting because the nature of outdoors television and Primo shows over the years, so much of it was done in the South that we loved. But, you know, and outside of elk hunting, you'd whitetail hunt in other parts of the country, and it would be a season, you know, you'd go this outfitter, this place. Y'all committed to doing a show all about one piece of property. I thought it was really it was really good. I appreciated that.
Yeah, and I think it was so different, you know, because no one had ever, you know, there's folks that dedicate, you know, that have shows that dedicate their show to one place, but no one had really ever done that in the South.
Right.
And it was unique, and then what made it so special was Cottonmouth being like it was. I think we touched on this last time. It got to the point where Cottonmouth pretty much became its own character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was. I can remember when we'd have guests in from time to time, or you know, we'd have some sponsor friends come down and hunt, or even every now and then we'd have to hire like a freelance camera guy, and it was a pretty common theme. They'd come down there and be like, "Hey, when do we get to see the skin and shit?"
Yeah,
and so, you know, we were like. We were there all the time, so we didn't really think of it, but, you know, so many scenes were shot at that skin and shed. That's what everyone wanted to see. They were like, we want to see skin and shed. I'm like, all right. I mean, it's right down here. But it just became kind of, I don't know, so branded to Cottonmouth. And it was a testament to how much people gravitated to it. It was encouraging to see, for sure.
There's got to be a wild story behind the name Cottonmouth. There's got to be something. Somebody got bit or something while they named it Cottonmouth. Do you have a clue?
I wish I could give you a more detailed story on that. The name. So when I came to work for Primos, so I was there. Like my first year at Primos was the first year we hunted Cottonmouth.
Yeah.
But all those decisions had kind of already been made before I got there. And so when I showed up there, that was Cottonmouth. And I don't know if there was any wild story about calling the place that. I do know, I think, do you remember in the you know, old Primo's days, they hunted that place called Rattlesnake?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think there was kind of a link there. You know, they just kind of wanted to, somewhere along those lines. But honestly, I can't tell you, like, truthfully where that name just came from. I wish I could.
Maybe it was done.
I can tell you that place was covered up in Cottonmouth. We had no shortage of them.
Yeah, I'm sure
it'd be done the same way. I'll, you know, name a road or a patch like No Buck Patch or something like that to try to keep people out of it. We'll talk about the progression here. So we should be talking about Copperhead, not Kudzu Bluff now. The new location for the Primos crew. It keep with the theme.
Yeah.
You say, listen, guys, this is going to have to be Copperhead right here.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, luckily, we haven't seen any copperheads, knock on wood.
See, Turkey season's coming. Turkey season.
Yeah.
Hey, what is that like after, you know, we talk about the how special it was focusing on Cottonmouth and that property. And I enjoy, because I love the hunts, but I love y'all talking about how you set stuff up and planting and where you're putting blinds and why. I mean, all that stuff is what cranks my tractor and tractor work, too. I appreciate y'all's trials and tribulations there because I live them myself. But when you go to it, you spend that time, that character of Cottonmouth, you spend a lot of time. Now you got a new love interest in the TV show in Kudzu Bluff. But y'all got to make a show. Even though you're brand new on a club, and I know what that's like. Your first year in a club, you're trying to figure stuff out. You may dumb into a deer, but you're just learning stuff. You're like, holy cow, I didn't know this road connected to this and this bottom's right here. But y'all have to figure that out and do a dang TV show at the same time, Blake.
Yeah, man, and I'm not going to lie to you, it has been difficult, you know? Truthfully, I'm just being real. Like, it has been difficult. Simply because, I mean, I was talking to Jordan about this. I think we all talked about this. I said, you know, you hunt a place, like, take Cottonmouth. We hunted Cottonmouth pretty much exclusively for 6 years. And that's river hunting. You get used to hunting the river. You get to know a place over 6 years. And I'm not going to say we had that place just completely dialed in, but, you know, you hunt a place that long, you're like, all right, this time of year, if we go to this spot, we know historically from this and this and this that, you know, we probably got a good chance starting right here, where all of a sudden you're thrown into Kudzu Bluff, which is hill country, and, you know, we don't know what's going on. We truly started over from scratch. And so it has been a steep, steep learning curve. But at the same time, it's been fun. Figuring it out, and just I say figuring it out like we've gone and figured it out already. We most definitely have not. It's gonna be a while before we get that place, you know, figured out like we feel comfortable with. But I mean, that's why we do it, right? You know, trying to put the puzzle together.
How big a place is this? How big was Cottonmouth compared to this new place, Kudzu Bluff?
Kudzu Bluff is pretty significantly. It's smaller. Where, you know, Cottonmouth was big because, you know, how it laid on the river, we had those three ports, you know, three states in that one property, whereas here we're just in Mississippi.
Right.
So, it's definitely smaller, which is, I'll tell you what challenge that gives us as well is, we're dealing with more, on Cottonmouth, it being as big as it was, we kind of had tabs on what kind of pressure was put on those deer. Whereas here, where it's smaller, we're dealing with a lot more pressure deer, which has been a challenge as well, you know. And I know some guys probably listen to that hunt public ground all the time. They're like, we deal with pressure deer all the time. And, you know, more power to you.
Yeah, but they're not making a TV show, though.
That's what I'm saying, man. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say it's been easy. I'd lightning would strike if I said it's been easy. But, you know, I mean, that's, like I said, we're just trying to put it all together and dealing with pressured deer and trying to figure out what these deer do. And I tell you, the thing that took us the most off guard is the timing of the rut, you know, because we got so used to when the rut was at Cottonmouth, you could kind of be like, all right, this time of year, it should start kicking off. It was like, I think it was December the 6th, and me and Troy went hunting, and I was hunting, and Troy was filming, and we were just like, okay, you know, it's a good morning. We'll go out there and sit, not really expecting anything out of the ordinary, and it breaks daylight, and there's deer everywhere, bucks chasing does, bucks grunting. We're like, what in the world? You know, it just happened like that, and that's, you know, again, that's just learning a new place and what those deer do.
Well, yeah, and compare that to Cottonmouth. So, because coming from Alabama perspective, we have finally gotten a little better about understanding our rut zones here, and we had a shift for our southern zone here to February 10th because the rut was real late. We have as many as seven different rut zones if you want to get super technical, but in reality, probably got two major ones that people, because you get over by Georgia, there's like three or four right there next to each other, but the rest of the state, let's say two, from right now to a later rut that's, you know, around February 10th or a little bit after. So, but in Mississippi, I remember, I mean, all the years of walking around in, do I get in trouble if I say public land? Government government forest over there in South Delta. How about that? That may have a WMA sure. there. So I used to live in there, duck hunt, and would see rutting going on in December and see a lot of guys bringing some big bucks out of there, which was wild to an Alabama boy because January, late January's rut yeah. over here. So that's where I started going, well, it's not the same everywhere, but you're talking about the distance from where you are at Kudzu Bluff to Cottonmouth is not that far. And how different is the rut December 6th versus what would the rut be? What would like a peak of rut be down on the river at Cottonmouth?
Usually I'd say around December 16th, 18th, you know, you really start seeing it go. And the other thing too is like at Cottonmouth and it, you know, we've been fortunate enough to hunt, you know, multiple different places along the river, like Togo Island mm-hmm. and Swamp Donkey properties. And they all kind of mirror from what I've seen as far as the rut goes. You'd see peak rutting activity around December 18th, like I was talking about. But then you'd see, you know, second rut, and you'd still be seeing deer doing rutting deer's things in January. Like I was with Brad at Togo Island this year, and I want to say I could find the exact date, but it was right after New Year's, so early January. And he grunted in a huge 10-point, six-and-a-half-year-old deer, and grunted him to the tree, basically. And that's in January. And so that's how that river rut can work. But here on Kudzu Bluff, like what was strange about it is it started, like, December 6th, and then for about a week and a half, it was like, full bore. And then I'm talking a hard cutoff. Like, it just, boom. Rut's over. And it was just like snap of a finger. And so going from not only a different timing to, like I said, it the river just drug out longer, where here it was like just this quick window and it was over.
Almost like a Midwest light switch there. We're coming right back. More with Lake Pickle from Primos. We're going to talk about, you know, he mentions those different properties on the river. I'm going to talk about one of the bucks that I've seen some pictures of that Lake killed this year down on that river. Something in the description of the hunt that happened. We'll do that when we come back right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, continue our discussion with Lake Pickle, with Primos, host of the Speak the Language podcast. Well, we're getting, of course, you see him on the show. He's behind the camera and in front of the camera. You watch him on Primos, and we'll talk about where to get the show. I watch a lot of YouTube, but it's on the TV as well. And, Lake, I mean, are you and Jordan co-hosts of the podcast, or are you the host of the podcast and you let Jordan come on sometimes? What?
So I'm like, I guess technically I'm the host.
See, that's right. Yeah.
But it's gotten to where that Jordan is on there just about as much as I am, just because, I don't know, me and him, like, I don't know. I see that dude more than I see any other human on this planet, I feel like. And me and him just, I guess, can run a conversation pretty well. And so there still be some episodes, like if I have a guest on, sometimes it's just me and him talking, but more often than not, it's me and Jordan, or me and Jordan and somebody else. And then we'll get Will when we can, or Brad and Jimmy, whoever. But yeah, Jordan's on there just about as much as I am.
Well, I enjoy y'all's interaction, and it shows that y'all are friends. It's like this man and I have been doing this show for decades here too. And you get somebody that you line up with, and it just, I think people can hear it, and I hear it in y'all's show. It's good stuff. So, but make sure to tell them something, you know, start some kind of problem. Say, this guy in Mobile says that, you know, you're not really a co-host. You're just a guy that I let on, or something like that. Just starting trouble everywhere. You mentioned, we're talking about the river and the runt down there, and you did, even though you're hunting in the hills now, you got to go back. You've gone with Brad to his place, but you went to, I heard y'all talk about this Swamp Donkey place, and for a guy like you that has seen what you have seen in the Whitetail Woods, to be, you sounded awestruck when you were talking about that place.
Oh my God. Yeah, so my relationship with deer hunting is so much attributed, I guess, to where I grew up hunting in central Mississippi. And like I said, it's kind of one of those things, y'all understand it. If you grow up a deer hunter where I grew up at, if you didn't get to hunt along the Mississippi River, you dreamed about it, you know, because you just heard all these incredible stories. And so when you take a place that, like Swamp Donkey Properties, and the reason, honestly, so the reason that those works, they, it works as well as it does, or a big part of it, is so you've heard me talk about Togo Island. Togo Island and Swamp Donkey Properties neighbor one another. And so Togo Island is like 7,200 acres and Swamp Donkey's like 9,800. So you have this giant chunk of property that is all under the same management program. They're all on top of their doe quota. They're all on top of, you know, the same rules as far as killing the right age structure of deer. And you've heard it, or I heard it time and time again, especially when I was in school, or if you've learned anything about, you know, watched anything with QDMA, you hear that, you know, rut activity is directly related to the buck to doe ratio.
Right.
And so the rut that I got to witness on Swamp Donkey Properties was the most incredible thing I've personally ever seen in my deer hunting career, I guess. Even more so because, you know, I started out filming with the show based out of Iowa, and I saw some crazy stuff in Iowa. We all heard or seen how the Midwest rut can be. But that Swamp Donkey Properties, man, it was insane, the rut on that place. Absolutely insane.
I mean, more reason, and what that show, when that show comes out, more reason to get fired up. When I'm feeling down about shooting does, I'm like, I don't want to shoot any more does. That's the kind of show I need to watch.
Yeah.
To get fired up.
Yeah. That's what we were talking about. I think I said something along these lines. Like, if you ever heard, you know, a biologist talk about the importance of getting your doe numbers right, if you're trying to manage the place that way, that's why you do it. Because, I mean, that was the most intense rut I've ever witnessed.
Would you see a lot of bucks chasing one doe, I guess?
Well, eventually, yes. But, I mean, so, like, the first afternoon, we crawl up into the tree. Jordan gets in the camera stand. I get in my stand. And we hadn't been, like, Jordan's filming me. You know, every hunt we do kind of an intro or an opener. Mm-hmm. So, hey, this is our setup this afternoon. And we were sitting in this big select cut. And, I mean, so I'm doing the opening of the show, and I hear something. I look around, and there's a doe, and the doe's running. And I'm like, okay, she's not downwind of us. And so being this time of year, there's a good chance, yep, there's a buck back there.
Yeah.
Immediately, there was a three-year-old eight-point chasing her, and they ran within 50 yards of us. And in that first afternoon, we saw, I think, six or seven different bucks. All of these were, I think they were about 3.5 years old, and then one, I couldn't tell what it was, and so I grunted, and he came to the tree. He ended up being three as well, so I didn't shoot him. And then we saw a mature buck right at last light, but the way that he was moving, I couldn't shoot without, you know, it wouldn't have been the best shot, and I'd have to get the gun pointed in an unsafe way where Jordan was, and so we didn't shoot him. But that was just in the first afternoon.
Man.
And I think it was the next, I want to say it was our second morning, but it was about, I think it was somewhere between 9:30 and 10 a.m., and the action had kind of slowed, and I'm looking, and I hear a commotion, and all of a sudden, busting out of this big timber coming into the select cut, I just see deer start boiling out of there. And I, honestly, my initial thought is something bumped a bunch of deer. I mean, something just, you know, there's a bunch of deer, and, so, you know, somebody or something bumped them, and they're running away. And then I realized what it was a single doe getting chased by eight different bucks. Eight.
Man.
Eight.
Yeah.
Eight bucks. Never in my life have I witnessed that.
Man, that's something. Yeah. Any of them good ones?
Yeah, let's talk about the one he shot.
So, yeah. I tried to explain this on the podcast. It'll make more sense, I guess. I think I explained it well enough. What happened is that doe, bless her heart, she ran, and as soon as she got into that select cut, you know, she got into the thicket and stuff, she pretty much jumped and then dove and hit the ground. I mean, she was trying to get away, you know?
Yeah.
And what happened is that wad of $8 pretty much just crowded around her, and it was just madness for, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes, and there were bucks fighting each other. There were bucks chasing each other around. They were trying to figure out exactly where that doe had went. And I told Jordan, Jordan was asking me the same thing. He's like, is there any, you know, there any shooter deer in that bunch? Are there any, you know, you see any old ones or anything like that? And I'm like, man, I can't really tell what's going on right now. There was so much happening. I had to kind of let it calm down just to be able to assess what all I was looking at. And finally, what shook out, I mean, there was literally, there were two bucks standing on the edge of the select cut having a knockdown, drag-out fight. But what finally shook out is there was one buck standing over the top of that doe, and he got to the point where he was just running all the other bucks off. They'd try to come in close, and he'd bristle up and walk towards them, and they'd run away. And so he had established himself. He was the hoss, you know. He was like, y'all stay away. This is my doe. And I got to studying him, and I was like, Jordan, that's an old enough deer for sure, you know. We got, because finally when all that calmed down, I got to take a really good look at him. And so we decided, I was like, yeah, I'm definitely would happily shoot that deer. But it took a while because, you know, there was so many deer in the way and walking around. I had to make sure I was making a clean shot. And what I ended up doing is I knew I was not going to call that deer over to me, but I was just like, man, if I can make, you know, a buck noise, if I can grunt at him, if I can snort wheeze to him, maybe it'll make him react enough to at least, you know, walk out a little bit so I can get a clean shot. And so I went to grunting, and he would look my way, but he wouldn't really move. And then I snort wheezed, and finally, between a combination of that, because when I snort wheezed, he started looking at me pretty hard. I'm pretty sure it was the snort wheeze that did it. I can't remember for certain. But he was looking hard in my direction, and then another buck tried to walk into him, and he walked out to that deer, and when he did that, I got a good enough opening, and he stopped, and I had a clear shot at him, and I killed him.
It's a heck of
a
buck.
Yeah, that was a wild hunt. Wild hunt.
You know, and it's something for any of us to say it's a wild hunt, but, you know, just the nature of your job and the things you've seen, when I heard you recount that, I said, yeah, it's a man who's seen some wild hunts, and that one right there. He's now taken his top of the list. So that's, I'm just excited to hear it about. I can't wait to, so people know y'all are filming shows that'll be running this fall season, right?
Yeah, on Outdoor Channel, yes, sir. And then after they go to Outdoor Channel, they will, after they air on Outdoor Channel, they'll go to YouTube.
Yeah, okay. I want to talk about that too, because I mostly consume y'all's product on YouTube, the video, but just because time's, so. Outdoor Channel goes first, and then is it another year or is it weeks later? When does the stuff go to YouTube, to your YouTube page?
No, it's usually, and I should be more up on this, but it's a couple months after. I know that.
Okay.
So it's not like the next week, but we're good about whenever they start going up, we post out there and let everyone know on social media, like, hey, the shows are now being uploaded on YouTube. You can go and watch them there. But, yeah, it's usually a few months after.
So what we'll be seeing this fall will be the first season at Kudzu Bluff, those shows, and obviously these hunts on the swamp in the river swamp too.
Correct, yes, sir. That's what it'll be.
All right, I want to.
No, I said that'd be exciting because Sean just showed me a picture of that deer, and that is a very nice deer. Yeah, so that should be a good show.
Oh yeah, I was pumped up. I was very pumped up. About that deer, you know, I mean, big old deer like that, and then him acting like he was. I mean, because I'm the kind of person, like truly, I mean, I appreciate a big deer. I appreciate a high-scoring deer. But, again, just from growing up where I went, you know, I still get more thrill of how the hunt took place itself. So being that kind of hunt, how it was, and watching all that happen, that's what made me as excited as it did. I mean, it was incredible. Truly incredible.
I want to do this, too, as we run to the next break here. Tell folks if they want to check it out, where's the best way to check out the pictures of that buck and follow you on social media? Where do they go?
Sure. You can follow Primos on Instagram and Facebook. Just search Primos Hunting, and then I myself, you can see them there as well. I'm pretty easy to find. It's just Lake Pickle. You know, there's not too many Lake Pickles running around, so I'm pretty easy to track down.
As I said, first time Lake and I talked, I said, you really missed it. You should have been a radio disc jockey with me back in the day. I mean, Lake Pickle, yeah. That name, I'd have hired you without an audition tape with that. All right, coming right back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. I'm ready to wrap it up on a Saturday, but I don't want to. I got to go ahead and get the invite asked to get, at least before turkey season, our buddy Lake Pickle from Primos back on. So can I get you, put you on the record now? You're going to come back on the show?
Yeah, absolutely. Fun.
See how I do it? I do it in front of everybody. That way he can't say no. See,
yeah, when he gets off the air, he says, well, Sean, I can't do this. You know I can't.
You know what? Speaking of turkey hunting, too, I was telling Mike before we dialed you up today, you're putting some pictures on your Instagram and some videos from early turkey hunts and turkey hunts when you're in high school and in college. Holy cow, how we aren't kin, because it reminds me, I mean, just looking at you back then and looking at it, go back. Mine are so old that they're on actual film pictures, but like missing a class or moving a test or something like that because the weather was good, the turkeys were gobbling. You weren't alone in doing that, Lake, okay? You weren't alone.
Yeah.
Y'all did that in Starkville. We did that in Tuscaloosa, too. we absolutely. I can remember, I mean, like coming in, pulling in the student parking lot and taking off camo and try to put on some jeans and a shirt to go into class, stack like I hadn't been turkey hunting. Yeah,
turkey blood on your shoes.
Yep, many times.
Yeah, well, see, the thing that I had going for me is I was in I was a wildlife, fisheries, and aquaculture science major. So the building that we were in was called Thompson Hall. It was the College of Forest Resources, and so I wouldn't say the teachers or the professors would excuse it, but they had a little bit better understanding than most of the others, mm-hmm. I would say. So I remember specifically that day, you know, from that picture I posted from me and my cousin Tanner, we went out to the and shot a turkey that day. And I still, it's funny, like I sit there and I hesitate. I can't do it. I can't say where I was, even though everyone can probably guess, but it's just, you know how it is. You
I
know,
do.
You're not, if you're on public ground, you don't say where you are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so yeah, we both. I had a lab that day for one of my courses I was supposed to be in, like at noon, and I definitely missed it because we killed that turkey. But I had another later class that afternoon. I think it was like at 2 or 3 o'clock or something like that. And I go walking, and I'm speed walking through the building, and my professor from that lab that I missed sees me walking down the hall, and he just looks at me, and I mean, he knew what I had been doing, and he said, well, did you get him at least? And I said, yes, sir, I got him. He said, all right, I'll see you next time then.
That's awesome. That's all. Yeah, I don't think they cut me that slack in the communications building. They didn't do that for me, so I had to hide a little bit more on it. But I love those pictures. Good stuff you're putting up there. And just good content. I got to say, what y'all are doing with your podcast is fantastic. You're a natural at it, and keep doing more of that. You're bringing real good content and bringing a lot of people together from the outdoors world, It's not the same old bunch of folks, which some of the same olds are good, but you bring other people in the mix, and I mean, hats off to you, man.
Thank you. I really do appreciate that. I truly do. The podcast is something that it's my brainchild, so to speak, and so I have a ton of fun with it. And yeah, to your point, like I've made friends with folks because of that podcast that I never would have made if it weren't for it. And so I thoroughly enjoy it and love the fact that I get to keep doing it. So, yeah, it's been a blast so far.
And also, just a side note, I'm going to, when we get finished here, Mike, and we'll find out where he went for the – you got turkey – how late was it when you were in Maine? When were you turkey hunting? May something or June? Or
what? Yeah, no, I shot a turkey on June the 1st.
See?
Man.
See, Mike?
That was the first time in my life. Yeah, it was crazy.
Well, if you get to hunt all over all year, you can kill them. I guess the season. How long does the season last in Maine?
I think it ended on like the 4th of June or something like that. We were there at the tail end.
Mike, road trip.
Yeah, I'm ready. But see, snapper season's going on for us, Sean.
That's true.
That's the problem.
That's the problem.
There's no turkeys in Maine. Y'all don't want to go up.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to mess with those anyways, right? And like Mike said, we'll be distracted, and we'll have you here snapper fishing with us beginning of June when it starts, so you won't be able to go either. So, all right. Once again, tell folks, want to watch, of course, on TV, and we'll talk about the TV and then the website. They want to watch Truth About Hunting. Where do they go?
Outdoor Channel. We air on Outdoor Channel at 9:30 Central, and Tuesdays at 6 o'clock Central. I'm pretty sure I got those right. Then we have some airings on Friday and Saturday as well. Then we have the YouTube channel. Just go on YouTube, type in Primos Hunting, and then we have a web series at primos.com that you can watch. So we're all over the place. Then the podcast on iTunes and Spotify. Everywhere you want to look, you can find us.
What about TikTok? What about your TikTok page?
Oh yeah, we have not made it to TikTok yet. Maybe one day.
There he is, y'all. Lake Bickle with Primos. Thank you, man.
Thank you, Lake.
Absolutely. Thank y'all. Enjoyed it.
Hey, we did. Same and we'll here. Get him back on the show soon. Prep Sports Report. All the way next.